Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
We've been here for 2 weeks, taking you all around China, east to Shanghai and north to Beijing, and out west here in Chongqing. We hope you know more now than you did before, but there is probably one last thing you'd like to find out. Should you be afraid? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, helping nearly 3 million members achieve financial security and give back to their communities and congregations. Thrivent.com. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy.
在中华人民共和国重庆，我是李凯先生。
Live from Chongqing in the People's Republic of China, I'm Kai Rizdal. We are working on a Saturday morning over here. It is Friday, January 20th, back home. You know, it's amazing what happens when I grab my microphone and start walking around, just talking to people. Pretty soon, they forget the mic is even there, and we're having a conversation about buying cricket cages or sending money home or how China just isn't the place it used to be. And after almost 3 weeks of that, what I've been hearing is this, that China, despite its incredible progress over the past 30 years, is still a country not really sure of its place in the world, behind in so many important ways, but also dynamic, creative, and unbelievably hardworking. So Americans are worried about what China's rise will mean for them and what they can do about it. There is more than a little bit of fear. Right now, part of that fear is about cheap labor and pirated DVDs. But someday soon, American businesses might wish that's all it was. Marketplace's Jocelyn Ford profiles an auto parts company here in Chongqing that's moving in on an American specialty, innovation.
This looks like many Chinese factories, yesterday's equipment, a young workforce. But it's not any old widget factory. It turns out seals used in cars and many machines to prevent oil from leaking. These oil seals are made with a novel design, patented by inventor and factory owner, C.C. Du.
We have very innovative thinking, concept. We are very good in part design.
The beefy, talkative 50-year-old studied engineering in Britain and Japan. He has a dozen patents under his belt, and he's inspired by the likes of Henry Ford.
I have my own dream. I want to start a company like a Toyota, Ford Motor. Because from my heart, I really respect all these founders. I want to try to be one of them.
Today, C.C. Du's Duke Seals International sells only $4 million worth of seals a year, all in China. But in 15 years, he aims to become one of the six largest oil seal companies in the world, with sales in the billions of dollars. Du is starting off humble, with 185 factory workers in an ugly, dirty white tiled building. It's not the sweatshop you might imagine. 35-year-old line worker Sun Shihong likes her job.
It pays better than my last job, and it's more challenging. When I worked at a state-run auto company, the employees didn't earn much, and they didn't work much.
The shy, pigtailed grinding machine operator works on average 8 hours a day. She takes home about $190 a month. That's about double what Henry Ford paid his workers a century ago. But her salary goes a lot further than an American might think. She and her factory manager husband just bought a modest two-bedroom apartment in a high-rise still under construction. Next year, they hope to buy their first car. I asked Sun Shihong to take a wild guess at what her Detroit counterpart might earn.
The United States is a developed country, so I think the worker would earn $12 an hour.
Actually, average salary is more than double that, $27 an hour.
Wow, that's too much.
Factory owner C.C. Du believes the U.S. auto industry won't survive paying wages like that.
You can't afford it. Even you're a very kind of person, even you're a very nice CEO, you can't afford it. The competition is so high.
C.C. Du is counting on inexpensive labor to give him an edge, but he knows wages in China will eventually rise. His long-term survival strategy is to innovate technology and move up the supply chain. He's already climbing. Recently, he traveled to Detroit to show his oil seals to Ford and Daimler Chrysler and a bunch of their suppliers.
I think they were really surprised, excited. Where did this come from? Wow, this is very good. That is a fantastic.
But not good enough. A small oil seal manufacturer agreed to import his products. But the big boys told him quality control at his factory isn't up to snuff. As we pass by a molding machine, Cici Du swipes his finger across it and stares in disgust at a layer of oily grime. He chews out two new managers. It's their job to prevent dirt from contaminating the rubber.
You must clean the machine every day. Understand? You understand?
To solve his quality control problem, he wants to buy a computerized inspection system, but he doesn't have the $500,000. Banks in China rarely loan money to private companies like his. Private investors insist on a quick return. But Du shrugs off the challenges.
The world is changing. You can't stop the changing. You only can catch the change.
He says if you don't, you might end up like Detroit. When he visited there with a delegation from Chongqing, he was shocked.
The city of Detroit was not as good as I thought. Yeah, a lot of rubbish on the street. A lot of buildings are too old. Like a very old lady, 90 years old. She cannot move. She's going to die something.
But China, he says, is like a young person bursting with ambition. In Chongqing, I'm Jocelyn Ford for Marketplace.
My name is Chris Brown. Here in Michigan, I work at a Delphi plant in Coopersville. We build fuel injectors. We work in a white room, which is like a clean room. We are holding tolerances that are not measured in inches or millimeters. We're talking about microns. It's very technical work. The company that I work for, Delphi, now has a plant in Shanghai, China. Instead of competing with other companies, now we're competing against our own company and a plant that pays much less to their workers than what we do. I have a middle-class lifestyle. I consider myself well-paid. My kids have been able to go to college. The plant here in Coopersville, if that goes by the wayside, if they close this plant, I would not be able to afford to keep my house, probably. Am I afraid? Yes.
Chris Brown is machine operator for Delphi.
Should we be afraid of China? No, we should be afraid of ourselves.
James McGregor has lived in China for 15 years.
There's a Chinese proverb, Fubuguo Sandai. It means wealth doesn't make it past three generations. Americans, we are now in our third generation of post-World War II wealth. We live on loans. We have a negative savings rate. 3 years ago, I moved my family back to America from China, and the first question my son Grady asked me after watching American TV was, Dad, what is 0% APR financing? America could learn something from the Chinese. Chinese people save nearly half of what they earn. People in China are hungry and determined to become somebody. Economic development is a focus of national unity. The country pours money into its schools. Chinese parents push their children to learn English. And students are rushing to study overseas. We've become Fortress America. Since 9/11, our paranoid visa policies have pushed people away. More Chinese students now go to Britain and Australia than America. And those countries usually welcome them to stay after graduation. America, on the other hand, is limiting visas for foreign students. And we only give visas to people who promise they'll go home when they graduate. That's ridiculous. We should be giving permanent U.S. residency to any foreign student who gets a PhD in the hard sciences. We have a shortage of qualified people in the U.S., and smart companies know this. I visited Google headquarters recently. I wish the Fortress America proponents in Congress would pay a visit to the cafeteria there. It's a melting pot of immigrants from everywhere in the world. China, India, Russia, Poland, Africa. These are the people building America's smartest company. And this is nothing new. We're a nation built by the ambition and brains of hungry immigrants. At the same time, we native-born Americans should learn from the Chinese, learn to save more than we spend, learn to focus on education again. And we need to do all this before we choke on our own complacency and overconsumption. Now that's something to fear.
James McGregor is the go-to guy when you want to know something about China. He is most recently the author of 1 Billion Customers. He commutes between Minnesota and Beijing. Quick look at the Saturday morning papers over here shows that it is Saturday morning in a country where the media is state-controlled. In the absence of real news, we learned President Hu Jintao is on a visit to Greece. Sino-Greek relations are doing just fine, thanks. And the Chinese central bank says Beijing is absolutely not manipulating the price of China's currency, the yuan. In New York and London today, there was just one word to describe the oil and gold markets: anxious. The jitters drove gold prices to a 25-year high, almost $568 an ounce. Oil hit $68 a barrel over worries about supply disruptions, even though there are no signs of that. We turn to our European bureau chief, Stephen Beard, to explain why traders are so edgy. Stephen?
Well, in the oil market, there are three big supply worries. Iran, first of all, the big fear is that if it's referred to the UN Security Council, it might stop exporting. Then we've got Nigeria, and oil unions there said they were going to pull out all their workers from the main oil-producing region if the violent unrest continues. And then Osama bin Laden, his videotape has raised fresh worries about attacks on oil installations in Saudi Arabia and Iraq. So a lot of worry, and that has spilled over into the gold market. Investors and speculators have piled in, bullion for resuming its traditional role as a safe haven in uncertain times.
Stephen Beard in London. Back in Washington, things are heating up over the new Medicare drug program, as in how to fix it. 25 states have paid out millions of dollars over the past few weeks. They've had to cover drug costs for the poor and elderly who've fallen through the cracks in that plan. The mistakes just in California have cost $70 million so far. Governors and representatives of those states say the federal government needs to pay all that money back and fix the holes. Democratic lawmakers and some Republicans are pushing a bill to do just that. It is going to be a long and difficult weekend for employees of Ford. The company is expected to announce a massive restructuring plan Monday. Ford's been losing billions of dollars a year. Early reports are the company is going to announce 30,000 layoffs Monday and shut down 10 assembly plants. And the longest airline bankruptcy in American history is about to come to an end. A federal judge ruled today United Airlines does have its reorganization plan in shape. The company has cut $7 billion in annual costs, more than 25,000 jobs, and many employee benefits. The number two U.S. airline has been in bankruptcy for 3 years, flying the whole time, though. United emerges from its long haul February the 1st. Now let's take a minute and do some numbers. An ugly day on Wall Street. Bad earnings from Citigroup and GE spurred a 213-point fall in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow surrendered nearly 2% and closed at 10,667. The NASDAQ dropped 54 points, 2 1/3%, and at 2247. The S&P 500 lost 23 points, 1 8/10%, ending at 1261. For the week, the Dow fell 2 9/10%. The NASDAQ lost 2.8%. The S&P 500 fell 1 9/10%. The Shanghai Composite, though, continued to put a cheery face on the week. It rose 3 points, or 1/3%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.35%. That is a traditional Chinese flute you're hearing, and you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy. Marketplace is broadcasting live from China all this week. If you want to find out more, drop by our website. You'll find exclusive online features, including slideshows, a staff blog, and an interview with the musicians who created the Chinese version of our theme music. It's all at www.marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the special China edition of the Marketplace Datebook. In 2001, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon became the first foreign language film to earn over $100 million in the U.S. China's film industry has come a long way since the days of Mao, when repressed artists turned out propaganda films or no films at all. These days, the biz has blossomed into the third largest in the world behind Hollywood and Bollywood. A quote from Crouching Tiger, "A faithful heart makes wishes come true." I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal, live once again from Chongqing, China. You can't really talk about China and whether we should be afraid without talking about the environment. And frankly, I get those fears. I might have mentioned this already, but during the week we've been in Chongqing, I'm not kidding about not having seen the sun. The sky here is a permanent state of dark greenish and gray. My lungs burn, and if I've been out for a walk, I feel like I've kind of gotten something on my skin. So that's the doomsday scenario. What if China doesn't deal with its environmental problems? But wait a second. What if it does? The Chinese government wants to just skip Western-style industrialization and pioneer a whole new green economy. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
Spend some time in a smoggy Beijing traffic jam, and Chinese President Hu Jintao's promises of a cleaner, greener future seem to be coming from some other planet. Every month, 30,000 new cars hit Beijing's congested streets. Many spew out 10 to 20 times more pollution than cars in developed countries. Hardly a case for China's ability to innovate its way out of an environmental meltdown. But Brian McLean with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says China may be doing just that. The Beijing government recently drafted tough new national emissions and fuel efficiency standards. They make Western nations look like the slow learners when it comes to environmental protection.
Europe and the United States have been doing this over 30 or 40 years. China is going to do it over 10 years.
But words can be cheap. Bridging a half-century technological gap for China's auto industry is where the rubber really hits the road. China's solution? Build a Chinese Detroit on the outskirts of Shanghai, and build it for the Jetson generation. At the heart of this $6 billion investment is Tongji University's Clean Energy Engineering Center. Here, engineers like Lili Guang aren't just trying to make cars more fuel efficient. They're looking for new fuels.
If Chinese market can solve the future's car fuel supply in some way, such as maybe hydrogen or other alternative fuels, it will be a low cost and it can be applied to the other countries.
Other countries like the U.S., a market Chinese automakers are just beginning to tap. Think Walmart-priced hybrids, author and sustainability expert William McDonough.
China is really going to be a green laboratory because as they put out these demands for efficient products and effective products, they will lead in that technology and they will drop the price. There's no question, due to mass production.
And it's not just cars. It's the entire Chinese economy. Everything from renewable building products to wind turbines. The central government, for example, recently declared that it would double China's reliance on renewable energy over the next decade. That's put the country on the fast track to becoming the world's largest wind energy market. McDonough says China's advantage is that it acts more like a corporation than a country. What the president says goes.
The fact, though, that the leader, like the leader of a company, has said, let's go there, you know, we are going there. It's similar to many other circumstances where companies have reinvented themselves around new paradigms.
But this is also the country with a premier who once famously said it was still too early to assess the French Revolution 2 centuries after it happened. McDonough says China thinks in terms of generations, not years, an orientation that makes it difficult to respond to the problems of today.
Time is not really on our side.
Beijing environmentalist Ma Jun.
We cannot just wait and see our country just slipping into a real environmental crisis.
Ma says even the best laid plans can take decades, and by then, it may be too late.
I mean, we all hope that. I mean, China can develop a better way. I mean, that's a high goal. But in the meantime, we at least should achieve the minimum before we talk about those very high goals.
like enforcing even the most basic environmental standards, or actually informing a city's residents when their drinking water has been contaminated from a toxic chemical spill. Ma Jun and I talk in a Beijing restaurant over a pot of jasmine tea, a Chinese ritual with more than 2,000 years of history behind it. As the world's longest-running civilization, China has weathered everything from the wrath of Khan to Chairman Mao's Great Leap Forward. But Ma says if China doesn't take concrete steps now to protect its future, the brief window of the last two decades could be China's great undoing. In Beijing, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Sam took a lot of pictures during his reporting trip to China. You can see them and a boatload of others on our website at ismarketplace.org. So, should we be afraid? I put the day's question to Marketplace regular and former Labor Secretary Robert Reich.
You know, the United States tends to want to create nemeses. We've always had a kind of a country out there that we were afraid of. Now, of course, it's terrorism. But eventually, as China grows and becomes, if the current rate it's growing, in 20 or 30 years, the number one largest economy in the world, I think that China may become our nemesis.
When you don't know something real well, you're often afraid of it even more than maybe is rational.
Yes. There's a great deal of fear about China, perhaps because we don't really understand the Chinese culture. We understand capitalism, and we understand the kind of capitalism that is emerging in China. Your report on the widening gap between urban and rural wealth, for example, had a lot of kind of echoes with regard to what a lot of Americans are concerned about here. But, you see, even Chinese capitalism, as you've been pointing out, is different from American capitalism. Not only do you have a communist Chinese government, but also the Chinese are trying to follow a slightly different path for themselves. They want to do it their way. And there is also a tremendous amount of nationalism and national pride behind Chinese capitalism. That makes us a little nervous.
You know, I talked to Jocelyn Ford, our Beijing bureau chief, earlier this week about some of the protests down in southern China this past weekend. She said very plainly that this is what the government is afraid of, and that's why they're suppressing this so desperately. What else do you suppose the Chinese are afraid of besides perhaps their own people?
They're very much afraid of outsiders. China sees itself as very much of an isolated and unique society and civilization. And to be dependent on another culture, country, society, or even international capitalism, I don't think is all that comfortable for China. This is why they want to do it their own way. Inside China, I think the communist Chinese government fears that given all of the economic tumult, given all of the upheaval that China is going through socially and economically, that if they give way at all with regard to human rights, democracy, any of the demonstrations, any of the boycotts, they will be letting the genie out of the bottle. And that's going to be a huge problem for China in the future.
Let's look at the end game here then. In 2030, maybe 2035, depending on what kind of numbers you run, the Chinese economy is going to be the biggest one in the world and perhaps the most dominant as well. What does that look like for Americans?
Well, the United States is certainly not going to like it. I mean, as China over the next 20 or 30 years grows and prospers, a lot of Americans are going to look at that and say, now, wait a minute, with economic power comes political power, a lot of discretion to do a lot of things that we may not like. The end game, let's hope, is more and more economic integration, a Chinese middle class that is more and more prosperous, that is able to buy things from the United States, that looks a little bit more like how middle class Americans live, and therefore is not so different from us. Now, maybe I am looking through very rose-colored glasses, but it seems to me that's the only reasonable alternative, Kai. The alternative that is less reasonable, the one that I fear, is one in which China becomes not only our nemesis, but ultimately our enemy.
Robert Reich was Secretary of Labor during the first Clinton administration. His most recent book is called Reason. What do you think? Should the U.S. be afraid of China? Go to marketplace.org and click on contact.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
I never thought it would take me 8 years to get back to China. When I left, I was sure I'd be back in a year or two. That's how much I liked it. But life got in the way. And now, I have a sense that no matter when I come back again, whether it's next year or if it takes another 8 years, China will be less and less recognizable every time. Fundamentally different. When I talk to other people who've been here before and come back, there's a sense of sadness about all the changes that are happening, how fast it's all going. There have been horrible human costs, and culture and history are being lost. But there is, in a way, some false romanticism. Just blocks from the bright lights of the upscale riverfront in Shanghai, living conditions for millions of people are unspeakable. Out here in Chongqing, it's worse. We've been hearing all week about corruption and a looming environmental crisis and how young people here still haven't found their way in the new Chinese economy. If all that changes for the better, even gradually as China grows, then no, I'm not afraid. Our hard-working team here in China included Deborah Clark, Michael DeMarc, Nate DeMeo, Eric Johnson, and Brent Neely. Yuxiu Mei is our Beijing Bureau editorial assistant. Our Shanghai-based producer, Luo Tong, helped us navigate the Chinese system. Our producer in Los Angeles was Julie Small. Andrea Bernstein was our production assistant. Celeste Wesson is the senior producer of Marketplace, and J.J. Yor is our executive producer. Our theme music, composed by B.J. Lederman, was arranged by Chen Dawei and performed by musicians from the upcoming documentary, A Farewell Song. And special thanks to everybody on our staff who helped make the last 2 weeks of broadcasts happen. You can see the full list of their names on our websites. To say it was a whole lot of work from a whole lot of people is an understatement. So we're going home. 3 hours to Shanghai, 11 and a half back to L.A. A lot of people in this country are going home, too. Chinese New Year is next Sunday, a strong tradition in this still very traditional country. China pretty much shuts down as people travel to see their families, by train or bus back east in Shanghai and Beijing. Out here, though, the river can take you home. Down the hill at the port, groups of migrant workers stand around, smoking and talking, waiting to buy tickets. This guy's a house painter. He says New Year's the only time he sees his family. Same for all the others buying tickets, too. 1 billion people going home for the holidays. That's China, and that is Marketplace. Live one last time from the World Trade Center in Chongqing, China, I'm Kai Rizdal. Thanks for being with us. Zaijian. That's American Public Media, by the way.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.